Okay, we're on the very top of Yud-Tes Amud Aleph. Okay, Yud-Tes Amud Aleph. So we have Yud-Tes Chaf. I made a mistake. Chaf Aleph, Chaf Beis, Chaf Gimel, and half of Chaf Dal. Five and a half blot to finish. Okay, so we're continuing with our discussion of Bikurim. Now it's good to see this note gives us a little bit of an overview. It says there's three prohibitions associated with eating Bikurim the wrong way. Besides, there's a mitzvah. Always have to remember, there are mitzvahs too. There's positive parts to it. It's a mitzvah to bring Bikurim. It's a mitzvah for the Kohen to eat the Bikurim. But there are three prohibitions. Number one, we already learned long ago, eating Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim. We already learned that long ago. Eating of them before the essential part of the mitzvah is performed. It depends what's the essential part. Is it the reading? Is it the placing? Is it even seeing the Azara? Depending on what you hold like. Three, each of these is punishable by Malkus, by lashing. Furthermore, even after the mitzvah is fulfilled, Bikurim are prohibited to non-Kohanim on pain of death at the hands of heaven. Because it's like Truma. Just like Truma. If you eat Truma, if a non-Kohen eats Truma, it's death at the hands of God. Same thing. Why? Because remember we learned earlier, it's called Trumas Yedchem, the Truma of your hand. So since the Torah prohibits Truma took non-Kohen, so the same applies to Bikurim. You can't eat it there. So now, the question over here, when it says, May Amasai Mechayvim Aleihem, that's a question the rabbis ask. From what point is one liable to a penalty for eating them? So now there's two ways of looking at that question. Rashi explains, at what point a non-Kohen becomes liable to death at the hands of Shemayim for eating Bikurim? At what point does the prohibition for the non-Kohen to eat it come? Now, obviously, if the guy just is in the fields and says, oh, this is going to be Bikurim, that's a far, far distance from it actually being Bikurim yet.
Right.
You got to take it. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, the wind can destroy it, whatever. You've got to, you can't even begin to eat it. Nothing's really happened much. You've just designated it. So if you eat it then, I don't think, you know, you've really eaten real Bikurim. But at what point in the procedure of Bikurim does it assume the sanctified status of Teruma? That's the issue. When is it called Teruma? Okay. That's the way Rashi learns it. So at what point now, if the Yisrael eats it, now it's like you're eating Teruma, and now you're going to get death at the hands of Shemayim. Okay. That's how Rashi learns that. Tosfos add that the query also doesn't argue, but say also, when a coin becomes liable to Malkus for eating the Bikurim outside Jerusalem, because it only can be usher to eat Bikurim when it has the status of Bikurim. That's the real question. When do these fruits get the official status of Bikurim that therefore mean a Jew can't eat it if he's not a Kohen, and a Kohen can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim? Let's say the guy's bringing the Bikurim and he hasn't come to Yerushalayim yet. He's somewhere in Echves, Ramat Gan. Alright? And now the Kohen just eats it. Well, he's not going to get lashed for that. Right? It doesn't have yet the status of Bikurim. Okay, so that's the real question. When does it have this status of Bikurim-like quality, or rather, Truma-like quality? So when does that happen? So he answers, Mishiyiru Penehabayis, from the moment it sees the face of the temple, meaning when it reaches the Azara. Once the Truma comes into the Azara, now it is Bikurim. The question then will be, what?
Once the Bikurim comes into the Azara, it's...
What did I say?
You said once the Truma comes in.
Okay, you're right. I meant Bikurim. Right. Okay, because I'm calling it like Truma. So yes, just, yeah, okay,
but
good.
But really, it's Truma is really when it becomes what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, Truma is different. Real Truma is once you separate it. But the Bikurim becomes Truma-like. Right. Truma-like when those fruits are brought into the Azara. Yeah. Now that it's in the Azara, now it's real Bikurim, real Truma-like. and therefore the Yisrael can't eat it anymore. The Kohen can't take it out of Yerushalayim and eat it outside Yerushalayim. Now it's interesting, that's the way Rashi learns that, and let's just leave it like that. There's other commentators who learn differently. Some understand it once it enters into the city of Yerushalayim, not the Azor. Okay, it's a machlokas, but it's got to get in. If it's not in, it's not yet given the truma-like qualities.
It's still bikurim what he's bringing.
It's bikurim, but it doesn't carry any halachic punishable weight. All right, so it's not, the Jew is not prohibited in eating it yet. Again, you're not allowed to, but it doesn't come with a punishment yet. It's you're preparing it to become official truma-like bikurim. Once I put the little string on it in the field, I'm designating that as bikurim, but it doesn't yet have a status of truma-like bikurim. So obviously, I shouldn't eat it then either. Yisrael shouldn't eat it. The Kohen shouldn't eat it. But you don't. It doesn't carry the weight of the holiness. That's the word I'm looking for. Of truma. You know, truma. Once real truma. Once I separate the 2% in my backyard and I put it here, this is now holy. That's all the laws of holiness. So there'd be, but a minute before, all that grain isn't anything.
Yeah.
Even if I just separated but didn't say anything, I separated 2%, I kept my mouth shut. Still not. I got to open my mouth and I got to say, I hereby declare that this is truma. Now, all of a sudden, magically, by the mitzvah, it becomes holy and carries all the severity of it. So, when does the bikurim carry that severity of the bikurim? So, it's saying it's either when it enters the Azara or it enters into Jerusalem. Two different opinions what that is. Okay, now the question is, that's his opinion. That's when it reaches that level. So the Gemara now asks, so now who would be the Tanoic source of what you're saying? Okay, who is the Tanoic source? Kihai Tana, like this Tana, Tanya, we learned in a Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Bikurim, let's have a case of Bikurim, Mikzosan Bechutsu, Mikzosan Befnim. Okay, so let's say you've got a big, big basket of bikurim, and you put it down, and half of the bikurim is inside the temple courtyard, and half is outside. You have the Shar Nicanor. That Shar Nicanor, once you cross into the Shar Nicanor, you've entered the Azara. Okay? So, what if they're right on the threshold? So, some of the fruits have gone into the courtyard, and some haven't gone up. Now, this would assume, now look at this, now I've made a little error. This would seem to apply where the bikurim were in two vessels. Accordingly, because you don't have to only bring one basket. If you want to bring a lot of bikurim, you can bring two baskets. According to the expression, partly inside and partly outside, is used because all the fruits were designated as bikurim together by the owner, and so are regarded as one unit. So therefore, assuming it's simple, meaning it's two vessels. One he brought in, one sin. Possibly, however, the Tanya refers even to a case where all the fruits are in a single vessel. He maintains that we view each fruit independently rather than the vessel as a whole. That'll be a whole machlokas. Either way, part are in, part are out. So what's the halach? Shebachutz, the stuff that's outside of the Azara, harehen kechulin l'chol divrehem. We treat them like ordinary foods in every aspect. It has no aspect of kedusha. Remember, when a kohen eats this, can he eat it when he's tummy? No, just like truma, he can't eat it when he's tummy. So that's the question: when does that? All the laws. What?
It's not quite.
If it's not there yet, right, just missing, it's like regular mundane food, carries no prohibitions at all. Shebefnim, once it goes into the courtyard, then harehein kehektish lechol dvorim. It's like a holy thing in every aspect. Okay, so one second. Prior to this point, none of the restrictions apply, but one may not eat them because the positive commandment to bring them to the temple, place them with the altar, and recite the word. Remember, there's a positive commandment. What does the positive commandment require? I have to bring it into the Azara, one. Number two, I have to read the psukim, or rather place them down. Number three, read the psukim. Those are positive mitzvahs. You can't do that if you eat it. So there's no avera of eating it at that time. But when I eat it, I now make it impossible for me to do the mitzvah. That's why you can't eat it, because then I'm not doing... You never get lashed and punished for not doing a positive mitzvah. It's not a good thing. You haven't performed the mitzvah. There's an aspect, there's a negativity to a being who does not do a positive mitzvah. So if I'm eating the bikurim to be before they are... And there's no way you can, I don't know if you can make this up, because what are you going to do? Go all the way back to your farm? But Bikurim is the first fruits. These are the first fruits. There are no other first fruits. So once you've eaten them, there's no Bikurim to be brought, theoretically, unless he has a few different cycles of food coming into fruition. But so now you've negated the ability to perform the positive mitzvah, which is not good, but it's not punishable. I mean, you have to do tshuva on it, but it's not punishable. So when does these fruits achieve this status that now it's like truma once it goes into the Azorah or once it goes into Yerushalayim? Now it's got this as question.
What did you say? It's like similar to a few weeks ago when we said once you nullified the positive mitzvah, like once you kill the mother bird, you can't shoo it away. So once you've eaten the bikurim, there's no, it's not,
it's yeah, it's not exactly the same, but same that's idea. You've knocked that idea out.
Rabbi?
Yes, sir.
So in an orchard, we talking about first fruit for the entire orchard or per tree? How does it work?
No, for the orchard. Let's say you got 20 trees, 20 fig trees.
Yes.
So even in 20 fig trees, there's going to be, from the 20, one tree that will produce the fruits first.
Right.
Maybe a day before.
Right.
They all don't, what's the word, not blossom, what's the word I'm looking for? They become ready, whatever.
Ripen.
Right, so when do they begin to ripen? They don't all ripen on the same day.
Yes.
So he goes through the orchard and says, there it is. There's over this tree.
So that designates
that's the
orchard.
One that's early, and it's going to take like 4 or 5 of these dates, or how much you want. You're a rich man.
For the whole orchard.
And then you see there's another crop of figs. Okay, take a few from the figs. They only had so many crops. It's not like they had 30 crops. You go to Yerushalayim, the Galil, how many crops does a farmer have? Usually every year, one crop. Usually, maybe two. It's not like there's 20 crops.
Yeah.
So therefore, he brings, now if he's a wealthy man, he'll take a big bet. It depends how charitable you want to be. You give, you're like a Purim. Someone will give you a mishloach manos, give you one orange. Could. It's a mitzvah. I'm going to give you the whole fruit basket. So that's the same thing. So how much you want to give? Depends how generous you want to be. How much you want to schlep. So you take, okay, let's say I'm an olive producer.
Right.
Right? When you go to trips to Israel now, they always take you to Galil to see all the olive trees that the Jews are planting before the Arabs plant them. Mm-hmm. So you're going to say, here's the best olives from the grove, or whatever you want to call it. So you cop right a big... Now, you're not going to bring one olive, I'm going to designate this tree. It's got 50 olives on it, whatever. Boom, those 50 olives go to...
But that tree, Rabbi, by itself, the only... One or two are first.
Yep.
So you can't take the whole tree and say, that's my first crop.
No. You take from that first tree.
They don't need the ones that have ripened.
Yeah, okay. So that's fine.
And that doesn't designate the whole thing as being... Like, there's other trees that I may...
Doesn't matter. It all goes together. You don't have to look at every single tree and every day. I got to take 10 figs from every tree.
Okay, that's what I want.
If you want to know more about that, there's a whole Maseches called Maseches Bikurim, which is only Mishnayos, not Gemara. That goes all into the great details of Bikurim. Okay. If you want, we could learn Bikurim after we finish this. Learn Mishnayos, you don't have to learn Gemara. Okay. That is the little interruption of the main flow. This end of this little piece. Now we start a much more complicated piece. Sorry, and we probably won't finish it till tomorrow. We're going back. We remember we had a number of opinions as to what's the critical point over here, for before which the Kohen cannot eat it. Was it? We have three times have been mentioned already. If it's possible to read it, it's a machlokas, is the placing down the critical point, and from that point on the Kohen can eat it, or is it the reading of the sukkah? Then we say, what about if you can't read it? What if you can't read it? Then there also is another machlokas. Is it from the time you place it down, or is it from the time you brought it into Yerushalayim? That was another machlokas, yeah. Remember? Yeah. So now we're going to bring another opinion into the mix. All we're going to do now is bring another opinion that's going to agree with somebody. And then the Gemara is going to want to say, and which Tana is he like? And that's going to be the discussion. Is the proof from the words from the Tana, is it a proof that he's like that Tana? Or perhaps maybe that Tana never really said that. That's going to be the whole discussion now. Amar Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, we're turning back to our regular scheduling program. Bikurim, bikurim, hanocha me'akeves behem. Just the placing is what holds back. And Kriya Emek as a reading does not. Okay, just the placement. Once it's placed, the coin can eat it, and he doesn't get lashed. Come on. According to which rabbi is he like? Now, it's a little bit funny over here. Gemara says the question seems odd, since on the daf before, we already identified a Tana who holds this view.
Yeah, we did.
That, right?
Yeah.
Furthermore, in its answer, the Gemara will ascribe the view to a different Tana than it did above. So Pnei Yeshua explains that this question is not the Gemara's, but was asked rhetorically by Rav Sheshes himself. Rav Sheshes disagrees with the earlier attribution and comes to inform us that this view is actually held by a different Tana. Okay, so he's saying, I think it's a different Tana who holds to this view and not the other Tana. Fine. So the question is, so Rav Sheshes, who says that Bikurim, the placement is critical and not the reading. So Rav Sheshes says, and I think it's like a different Tana than what was suggested by previous rabbis. Come on, like who? Ki hai Tana, like this Tana. Now, who is the Tana? The Tana we learned in Abraisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi says, Shlosha Dvarim, he says, Shlosha Dvarim, three things, Mishum Shlosha Sekenim, in the names of three elders. This Bryce of Rabbi Yossi is going to say three separately, not connected halachas, in the name of three elders, who are obviously Tanoim as well. Now, it's interesting, the Gemara is only going to bring us one out of the three. Why is it bringing all three? Because only bring the one that's germane to our topic. Sometimes Gemara will bring a brisa, the whole brisa, and a lot of it doesn't have to do with our topic. Sometimes because you can't like separate one thing from the other. But here are the three totally disjointed things, so therefore it's only need to read one of them. And one of them that Rabbi Yossi is reporting is from Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Yishmael is quote-unquote the elder. So Rabbi Yossi is quoting, so they're all Tanoim. So Rabbi Sheshes is saying, here is the Tana that holds that placing is critical and not reading is critical. You're not going to come out to this proof until you get to the entire Brisa and then the analysis of the Brisa. And only after the analysis of the Brisa can you see where Rabbi Yishmael said that point that placement is critical and reading is not critical. So now we're getting into a whole other issue now. Now we're going to have a discussion, very fascinating discussion. The Gemara now knows, when the Gemara's time already, there was no Beis HaMikdash. So now the question becomes, are certain mitzvahs still applicable even though there's no Beis HaMikdash? Even though we don't have a temple to bring things to, but yet there's the hallowed grounds of the Temple Mount. And certain mitzvahs, for example, and the discussion on the table is going to be Maser Sheni. Now, you can't deny that even though there's no temple, there is, theoretically, a mitzvah of Maser Sheni. There are certain mitzvahs that are theoretically exist. Let's say, Maser Rishon, or Truma. Okay, so there's a whole discussion. Is it dependent on there being a Beis HaMikdash, etc.? It's a whole big, big discussion over there. And at the back end, the Gemara is going to bring up some of those issues. But just in a simple understanding, okay, I want to eat my crops. Okay, well, guess what? Before you eat your crops, there's a lot of taxes you got to pay. 2% to the coin, 10% to the levy, another 10% you have to take to Jerusalem. So now the question is, so even though there's no temple, maybe you got to take 10% of your crop and eat it in Yerushalayim anyway. Just because Yerushalayim is destroyed, isn't there a sanctity? Like, what happens to the mitzvah now that there's no temple? Now, certain things we can never do. Bringing korbanos, for example, you can't do it. There's no mizbeach, there's no temple, you can't do it. But does everything require that? Who says I need a temple? who says, I need Jerusalem itself. Isn't Jerusalem eternally holy? Right? So that's the issue over here. Would we have to bring Maaser Sheni to Jerusalem nowadays? That was the question on the table. And they're going to compare it, and how the answer hinges is, can we compare it to the mitzvah of Bechor, bringing a firstborn animal, and also the mitzvah of Bikurim? That's how we're going to slip into Bikurim. All right? It's not the main topic. The main topic is Maaser Sheni. But parenthetically, as the Tana mentions some facts about Bikurim, you're going to deduce that he means to say that Bikurim requires placement and not reading. That's what we're going to come to tangentially, but that's going to be the proof he's looking for. So this is a discussion. So that Rabbi Shmuel says, Yochel, I might think, Yala Oda Maaser Sheni Bizman HaZeh Yerushalayim V'Yochlenu. A person has to bring Maaser Sheni to Jerusalem and eat it there, just like when the temple stood. Who says it has to? Maaser Sheni for sure does not depend on a temple. It doesn't say you have to eat Maaser Sheni in the temple. Eat in Yerushalayim. Right? Now, here's an important point. The Tana holds that the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael as regards Trumas and Maasers remains in force even after the Jews were for the most part driven out. That's what this Tana holds. Thus, one is biblically required to separate Trumas and Maasers from the crop in Eretz Yisrael nowadays. Right? Now, he considers whether the Maaser Sheni may be eaten in Jerusalem even nowadays instead of being redeemed for money. Now, here's the issue. Clearly, if you hold there's an obligation of Maaser Sheni, even if there's no temple because the land is holy, you've got to designate Maaser Sheni. Okay, let's say for whatever technical reason you can't bring it to Jerusalem, fine, but certainly you should redeem it. Okay, and now... What?
You have to spend it.
Or whatever you can, right? So the question is, so biblically, at least you're required to separate, but now can I actually take it into Yerushalayim instead of just redeem it for money? Now the question is going to be, maybe just redeem it, maybe you can't bring it to Jerusalem, whatever, but at least you have to do something, or better yet, can it be eaten in Jerusalem? Okay? Is there an issue here? Now, the Torah requires that unredeemed Maaser Sheni, unredeemed, be eaten lifnei Hashem. That's what the pasuk says. In the presence of Hashem, which is understood to signify Jerusalem. The Tana's question is whether Jerusalem has the status of being in the presence of Hashem only when the temple is standing, or even after its destruction. Can we say right now, when I go to Yerushalayim, are we before Hashem or not? If the law is that Maaser Sheni cannot be eaten after the destruction, it may be redeemed. Now we're going to, for a fraction of its value, and eaten as ordinary food, and the redemption money is disposed of. That's what we're doing nowadays. In other words, that's what do we think we do when we do this Maaser business, as Rabbi Haber shows you on the video? Okay, it's very complicated, but you just redeem it on a dime, all that stuff, all of it, and just throw the dime out. And the main thing is you want the kedusha to come off of the food. So either I just say, here's a dime, and all the Maaser has been redeemed, and now and here's the dime, and I just throw it out. The kedushas come off. Or he's saying, no, maybe Yerushalayim has the status of being in the presence of Hashem, and we got to eat it before Hashem. So there's the question. So there's two issues here. The land of Israel has the holiness. Does it still have the holiness, even though there's no temple? So it says, yes, it still has the holiness, and therefore the stuff is holy. Question is, do I have Jerusalem the way God described it for us to perform the mitzvah? Is it called Lifnei Hashem? Okay, so that's the issue. Is Jerusalem called Lifnei Hashem or not? So if it's not called Lifnei Hashem, so I can't go to Hashem, so then just redeem it on a dime. But if it's called Lifnei Hashem, then maybe I should take Yerushalayim and eat it. Or even redeem it, but spend the money in Yerushalayim. Okay? Now, that's going to create all kinds of problems, because especially when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there wasn't a heck of a lot of Jews in Jerusalem. So what are you going to do? I mean, who are you going to redeem? You're going to take all your crops there? You're going to take all your money? What are you going to spend it on? Remember when the Ramban went to Yerushalayim, he couldn't even find a minion. Couldn't find a minion of Jews. So what are you going to do? Take your mice and money and do what with it? Right? Anyway, but that's the issue. So do we have to bring the mice or shade to Yerushalayim nowadays and eat it there or not? So first he suggests a kal v'chomer, or similarity. He says, now he's going to seemingly refute it, that you don't have to do it. He's starting off saying, well, maybe I'd assume you don't have to do it. Why? Vidinu. And I've got a logical argument to tell you why you don't bring it to Yerushalayim anymore. Because let's look at something that's sort of similar. Bechor. Okay, when you have a firstborn animal, what's the halacha of the firstborn animal? Ta'un hava'os makom. You have to bring it to the place, meaning Yerushalayim, and eat it there. Whenever it says the place, it's called Yerushalayim, and that's the place for Bechor, Maaser Sheni, and Bikurim. They all are said to be eaten in the presence of Hashem in the place that Hashem chose. So they got to all be eaten in those places. So Bechor has to be in Yerushalayim. Okay, we know that. Just like Maaser Sheni, Ton Avos Malkum. So does Maaser Sheni have to be brought to Yerushalayim. So I'd assume if I know the law by one, I would assume the law is going to be the same by the other. Now, you can always ask questions. Maybe they're different, but this is the first assumption. So what do we know? Ma Bechor, we do know from Bechor, for reasons we're not getting into right now, Eina Ela Bifnei Abayis. Bechor is only eaten when the temple stands, because there's no altar. Remember, the Bechor has to be offered on the altar. Mm-hmm. You have to shecht it, and it has to be brought, part of it goes to Hashem. Well, if you don't got a Beis HaMikdash, you don't have you can't bring it as a korban, so you're not going to do that. So you're going to have to redeem that Bechor. So you have, remember, you have to wait till it gets a blemish. We learned that in the Rambam, right? Once it gets a blemish, it doesn't have to go to the Kohen, then the Yisrael can have it, he doesn't have to take the Yerushalayim. But we know a Bechor can only be done when there's a Beis HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim stood as it normally stood. So we don't. So it doesn't exist then. So I would assume Af Meiser ain't El Bifnei Abayis. I'd say the same thing with Meiser. You can't do it if there's no Beis HaMikdash. You can't bring it into. I'd assume that's going to be the thing.
I wouldn't, because you don't have to put it on the altar.
Oh, so that's Gemara's going to reject it. So no, not good. Mala Bechor, that's not going to be similar. Bechor shekein ton matadomim ve'emurim gamizbeach. Oh, that's the whole point. The Bechor, I would say you can't say it's similar, because the Bechor has another reason. You got to sprinkle the blood and burn the fats on the mizbeach. That's not applicable to Maaser Sheni, and therefore I can't compare it. Look, the reason Bechor is not eaten after destruction is seemingly not because the eating is inherently prohibited, but because the requisite avoda is unfulfilled without a temple and altar. Thus, its law cannot last to be sent to Maaser Sheni, which has no comparable avoda that would require the existence of the temple, right? So, therefore, it's not going to work.
So the placing of the thing is important?
No, not by Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you just walk in your slime and eat it. You're mixing up with Bikurim.
Yeah.
So Gemara wants to say, well, just like Bechor not, Maaser Sheni not. No, that's the difference. Bechor needs avoda, which you can't do, but Maaser Sheni doesn't need. So Gemara will try it. Well, wait a minute. You're saying the fact that it has to bring as a korban, that makes it different. We can't learn it from it. Okay, let's take a look at another thing that's in Yerushalayim that's not a korban. So maybe we'll show that the fact you need the avoda is not the critical point. Bikurim yochichu. Let Bikurim demonstrate. What do we know about Bikurim? Because we know what about Bikurim. Have to be brought to Yerushalayim. Is there any bringing into the Beis HaMikdash that happened? Bringing as a korban by Bikurim? No. So perhaps we can say Bikurim will demonstrate even something which does not require placement of blood and sacrificial burns or other may be eaten only when the temple stands. That's another law we know. Bikurim cannot be eaten after destruction because the Torah requires that they be placed before the altar in order to become permitted for consumption. Mm-hmm. The reference is to Bikurim that were separated. Now, wait a minute. Why is the Gemara trying to say this? It's going to be the same problem as we had before. with Bechor. Now, you're not going to like this. The Gemara is saying it's theoretically possible that Bechorim have not contingent on a Mizbeach. How about, let's say you separated your Bechorim somewhere in Tzvas,
yeah,
while the Beis HaMikdash existed and was still standing, and then by the time you came to Yerushalayim, it got destroyed.
Okay.
So once the temple is destroyed, the mitzvah of separating Bikurim is inapplicable, and any designated fruit as Bikurim is meaningless. Anyway, so let's say Maaser Sheni has no blood offering, but it may also be eaten only when the temple stands. So let's say, we see it's not only an issue of the Mizbeach and bringing korbanos, because you see the Bikurim aren't brought, and not because it's a korban. So therefore, the fact that Bechor has a korban, that's not a critical factor, because you see by Bikurim, it can't be brought as the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no aspect of bringing it as a korban on the Mizbeach. So let's be able to learn Maaser Sheni from either one. Because we see that Bikurim, you don't bring Bikurim, and there's no issue of bringing a korban Bikurim. So therefore, we see that, and still you don't bring it. So let's say Maaser Sheni is like Bikurim, however you want to slice it. Mora says, no, Bikurim has a stringency that this one also doesn't have. Now listen carefully to what the stringency is. Now what stringency does Bikurim have over Maaser Sheni? Maaser Sheni, just bring it and eat it. Bikurim?
Waiting.
Can you just bring it in and eat it?
No.
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 What do you got to do?
Place it and say the brachas.
Where?
Inside
the temple.
Yes. So now, look what he says. So Bikurim, you can't learn from Bikurim either, because it has a stringency. But look at the stringency that is stated. Mal Bikurim shekein teunim hanocha. You can't learn Maaser Sheni from Bikurim because they require placement before the altar, which Maaser Sheni doesn't. So we can't learn it from Bikurim, right? Because since the reason Bikurim cannot be eaten after the destruction is only because it's impossible to fulfill the requirement placement before the altar, its law cannot be logically extended to Maaser Sheni, which is no procedure like that.
It's more like the Bechor.
What?
It's more like the Bechor. You need the altar.
Either way. So we couldn't learn it from either one.
Yes, yes.
Okay, now how did they say that Bikurim was stricter? That you couldn't learn from it because it requires?
You guys are placing it.
Now, if it also required reading the text, why didn't the Tanna say it?
Yeah, how come it didn't say it? Oh, because
where do you read the text? Can you read the text in your house in Tzfas?
No.
No, you have to read the text in front of the Mizbeach.
Yes, yes, yes.
So why didn't he say it needs placement and reading or reading?
Because placing is essential. Reading
is not. That's the proof. Now, there's going to be more to this, Brysa. But you already got the proof, because since it only said we can't learn it because it needs placement, why did he pick placement? Why did he not say it needs either? He could have said it needs reading, or well, obviously you're going to read it after you place it
yes.
Right?
Placing is essential.
So you cannot read it before you place it. So it could have said it needs reading, and that would include the placement. Why did he say placement and not the reading? Must be reading is not essential. And the Zatana, that's what he's deducing, because why did you say it? Gemara will refute that proof later on, but so far that's the proof. So therefore, let's just, what?
Well, he could have just said altar the Mizbeach, because we're talking about comparing it to the Bechor.
But I understand, by Bechor he didn't say Mizbeach, he said Zrika's Dom. He didn't say the word altar either. It's assumed. You sprinkle the blood. You burn the fat.
Yeah.
Where? On the Mizbeach. When it says you place it, where?
Yeah.
In front of the Mizbeach.
Absolutely.
So that's what he's saying. It needs a Mizbeach. Therefore, you can't learn it. He could have said reading it, because we know, where do you read it? In front of the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
Same thing. So since he didn't say reading, must be reading is not essential. So how do we learn? So what's the law with Maaser Sheni? We can't learn it from Bikurim. We can't learn it from Bechor. So the Braisa ends. Talmud Lomar, it says, V'chalta sham lifnei Hashem Elokecha. Remember, we discussed the issue. It says, you eat before Hashem, all right, in the place that he will choose to rest his name, grain, your wine, your oil. Remember that whole long pasuk we did last week that listed six different things on the topic? All these things with Hashem. And what were some of the six things? Bikurim was one of them. Bechor was one of them. Meister Shein. All those six are in one pasuk. So if they're all in one swath like that, so we're all going to compare them. So Makish, we compare Meister to Bechor. We compare Meister to Bechor. Ma Bechor. It's a textual proof, not a logical proof. We want to do it as a svara. We want it first logically, so the logic you break because one is different than the other. If it's a textual proof, you don't have to go with logic. So just like Meister Shei, so Ma Bechor, just like Bechor, Eino Lefnei Abayis, only when there's a Beis HaMikdash, Af Meister, Eino Elefnei Abayis HaBayis. So same thing with Meister, and that's the proof. You don't bring Meister to Yerushalayim. Finished with the Braisa. Now we're just going to speak out the proof we spoke out. V'misa, if it's such that the reading is critical, so when the Gemara did not compare Meister Shein to Bikurim logically, it said because you don't place it, why didn't it leave Frach? Why didn't it ask Mali Bikurim Shekein to Unim Kriyav Anocha? It should have said Bikurim needs placing, reading and placing. Why didn't it do it? Must be it's a proof that the reading is not essential, and that's the Tana who holds that. We'll stop it at the proof. Tomorrow the Gemara is going to refute the proof. But right now we have a proof.